Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. The radio shows in the last months have taken on themes for each month. The theme for this month is symbols. And I've been really scratching my head to find a way to talk about the symbols or talk about the effect of the symbols or the use of the symbols as we have them in second degree that is interesting to all of you listeners, that doesn't cross what I would call ethical boundaries about our practice, and also that doesn't induce a kind of I want it to those people who have first degree, because for me, second degree is really a calling. It's something that happens from you. This particular practice, as I hold it, is not something that is like a pyramid scheme. Somebody once told me that they thought Reiki was like a pyramid scheme. And it's not like that. It's more like a continuum of learning. So preparation is a very big value for me, and a first degree student comes prepared to accept the teaching of first degree and to accept that practice, and as they practice, then that's the preparation for stepping into either a deeper calling for second degree, and also after years of other practice, of that practice, maybe stepping into the calling of being a master. And my grandmother used to say, first degree is all you need, which is really wonderful. And it took me years and years to understand that truly as a master, that this practice of Reiki and the first degree gives you whatever you need for the rest of your life. There is absolutely no need to take anything else. There's no compulsory thing, because you can't really be an expert on Reiki. You can only have a good practice, which means that you practice every day on yourself and on others as it comes to you. So today what I'm wanting to do is to invite a person who would come and talk about their practice of second degree and how it serves them beyond the actual first and second degree class, that there's something that develops inside oneself that carries on a teaching from the actual system that comes from within. And when I thought about this question and this idea, I came up with two names rather than one. And those are Helen Montague and Heidi Gates, and they both live in Oregon around the Salem area. And they can correct me afterwards. They came to me in August when I was in my first throes of working and being with having breast cancer, and I just had a surgery. And they offered me a 21-day treatment that they would send at a distance with a theme. And I hope I'm getting all this right. This is my memory anyway. And it took me a few weeks, maybe even a few months, to actually feel like I could connect somehow with this offering. It touched me very deeply, but I didn't really have a place for it at that time. And eventually they reminded me of their offering, and I was ready to accept it. And they worked with me, and we haven't actually talked much about the, quote, results. But I know that it was really important at that timing for me to receive these treatments, and I feel that something shifted, but it's so subtle. Sometimes that language doesn't really describe it. And so I don't actually know how Heidi and Ellen came to do this work together, and I thought that this would be a great starting point for our show today. So that's a very long-winded introduction. And Heidi and Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask both Helen and Heidi, Ellen and Heidi, excuse me, I'm going to mix these names up, I know, if they could just share with you listeners their own Reiki story, like how they came to Reiki, and a little bit about who they are, and they're both masters also. Okay, would one of you like to start?
This is Ellen, and I'll start by saying that Reiki has been in my life since 1988. I was living in Alaska and was taking a series of metaphysics classes, actually one class that extended for a long period of time. And over that three-year period, the instructor had tried to bring Reiki in as part of the survey of metaphysical, you know, that's what they called it at the time, metaphysics. But different kinds of energy work that people could learn about. So he had tried to bring Reiki in, and it wasn't, the timing was never right. So as I was leaving the state and coming back to Oregon, he recommended that I take a class with Barbara West, which I did as soon as I got home. And so I like to think that really, in a way, Reiki found me.
Uh-huh.
I went to this class, and I received the experience of Reiki, and I felt like I was home.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, it's really become a close companion. I think about my relationship with Reiki as a deep part of myself that is a way to access myself when maybe my conscious mind isn't available to me or is off on some other stream that isn't really working. I have what I feel is just a palpable experience of Reiki, sort of like my experience of connecting with the divine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you. Is that your? I'm just wondering if you're pausing, or that's the end for now.
Well, I think in terms of your question, you know, where am I with Reiki and my experience with it, I think that's over the years where it's come for me. I have found quite a transformation that has happened from the time that I was, in essence, kind of awakened in that first degree class, and the time was subtle, but I took it with a good friend of mine, and she and I practiced on a weekly basis, and found that the more we practiced, the more depth we gained in what we understood about it, so that subtle energy that had begun in that first degree class continued to deepen and deepen and draw us both into wanting an experience of connecting more deeply.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but I'll say about that, at the time that I had taken that class, my mother was experiencing cancer, and some treatments that she was going through were really difficult for her. And in my first degree practice, I was able to put my hands on her and give her some relief and allow her to sleep. And for me, it was very important to be able to connect with her on that level. And truly, what you said a little bit earlier was true for me. I would not have needed anything else than first degree to be able to allow her some space and some peace and some more, frankly, more connection with herself is the way that she described it as well. So it was very transformational for both of us.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Ellen. And Heidi?
Yeah, my Reiki, and with Ellen and I, Ellen said the other day, we're like salt and pepper, which is why we work so well together. We have very different entries into life and Reiki. And mine was, I was at a school of mind-body integration up in Alaska, and one of the requirements was Reiki. So I went into Reiki knowing nothing about Reiki, and Barbara West at that time came up from Eugene twice a year to teach, mm-hmm. and in that class, in walking into that class and being in Barbara's presence, I knew that I wanted to be a Reiki master, and I had no idea what that meant other than in the class and in her presence, I tapped into a peace inside myself that I knew that I'd been searching for my entire life. And since that time, it's been the one constant guide and healing and growing force in my life.
Wow.
So, yeah, and there's been a lot of shifting since that time. And so it started with in taking the first degree class, and 6 months later, Barbara came up to teach the second degree class. And in that time, I had a medical opportunity and went to Barbara and to have a Reiki session. And what she said, I had 2 weeks before I went to get retesting to get two biopsies on two different parts of my body. And so I was very, very frightened. And Barbara said, after her session, she simply said, I want you to receive 15 minutes of Reiki every day for the next 2 weeks from your classmates. And to me, that was the hardest thing in the world to do, because I was the one that always gave to people. I was always the one that supported people. And so my lesson in all of this was to receive and to ask for support and to be willing to receive that conscious support that Reiki offers from my classmates. And when I went back to both doctors at the time, there was no need for either biopsy. The lump on my breast had disappeared, and the other growth was not present any longer.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and in that 2 week time, I had made a decision in my life that I'd been putting off for several years. So that time really allowed me to make that decision that I needed to make to move forward in my life. And after that time, Barbara and I trained for me to become a Reiki master. And once she came up and initiated me again, and I began right away with her first degree students to teach a weekly Reiki class that grew into a 3-year journey at the school I was in. So
wow.
We did weekly classes on first degree, and then on second degree, and then I'm giving 4 consecutive sessions. And in that process, I wanted more clarity on how I showed up holding the truth for my clients versus projecting my life experience on them. And that's where the coaching model showed up in my life at an academy down in California to teach me how to support people to go into themselves to find their own answers, which is what Reiki does.
Uh-huh.
So that really fit nicely into my life and my practice. And then when I moved to Salem, Ellen and I got reacquainted and began partnering with Reiki intensives on the coast, and which we continue today. So that's my long story of Reiki.
Wow. Well, not so long. So how did you all come to do this distant work together? Because it seems like I wasn't like the first person that you had done this with, and I assumed, I don't know why this was, that you actually offer it as a service to people. Is that true in your combined practice?
It is.
Uh-huh,
it
good.
Is.
Well, I'm glad I'm accurate. Good. Okay.
Yeah. Well, truly, the process began in our development of the second or third Reiki intensive that we jointly did each February we get together for 5 days where people come and give and receive Reiki. And so the theme of this particular year that we were moving into was called Creating in the Moon Time. And we it was a workshop for women coming in and working in what we would have, what we termed the Moon Lodge capacity. So women walking into themselves into a sacred time of kind of allowing themselves to be in a separate location from their community, but still having the community close by. So we had a member of what we called the Sun Lodge who came and trained us in a little bit in drumming and that just to imbue the energy there for the first couple of days. But in general, women were there to walk into themselves, into that reflective mm-hmm. place. And so through that, we had an image of a river flowing through a kind of a yin-yang image. And our process in developing these workshops is to get together weekly and go through what our current life experience is, knowing what that some of that is what's being mirrored in the people that are being drawn to the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And so we discuss that, we take notes about that, we determine how that might fit into the workshop as we move down the road and use those experiences to develop what comes through. And one of those experiences was this idea of 21 days of Reiki or 21 cards or some invitations to walk into Reiki in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So that began. And Heidi, do you want to move more with that or do you want me to keep going?
Oh, keep going.
So we had this idea, and in the early winter, we played a game called the Transformation Game, and through that, got a little bit more clarity on this, and then indeed walked with this intention of creating a set of these cards to use for the workshop, and did so. So we had and happened to have an artist who was also a student who was able to help us put together the graphics that designed in this set that we were going to use for the workshop. So we had one set that we took in and used as the place for talking points. And, you know, as people were, what our experience is that as people go through 4 consecutive days of Reiki, they also go through a process of internal transformation that, and especially when we have, you know, 10 or 12 people in a close sort of intensive that's away from everyday life and we're all living together in the same place.
Right.
So the energy is just maintained there. And so folks walk in and we help to facilitate that and help them transform that as gracefully as we all can with the support of the group. So
mm-hmm.
sort of working in circle. And that's these cards that we ended up developing are round. And so just the idea that we're in circle, that it's the moon time. It happened to be the time of the full moon. So, you know, there were a lot of things that came together there. But the whole idea was, you know, what is your intention in moving through? What's Reiki calling to you? What's it bringing to you? And how is it deepening your experience of who you are while you're here and supported in this time?
Mm-hmm.
And allowing the magic number of 21, we wanted 21 cards to represent the, oh, and this is Heidi, by the way, and to represent the 21 stones that Dr. Usui used to mark the passage of time in his meditation. So we allowed in this process, we were guided to do a 21-day to use Reiki for 21 days to support us in creating these cards. So every day for 21 days, we sat with this intention of creating the cards. And in that process came up with the design of the cards, and we actually found the designer and created it. And then we did another 21-day focus with the intention of creating the invitations on the inside of the card. And we're... Yeah, so in so this 21-day process seemed was a guiding force in creating those, and then we used them during the workshop, and the women at the workshops really wanted to use these in their own lives and wanted us to print cards for them, which then guided us after the intensive to do more 21-day walks to actually create the cards for them.
One of the things that was elemental to us was just this concept of 21 days. And the whole idea of whether you used these cards or you just simply stayed with the intention for a 21-day period, that you were connecting with the work that Dr. Yusui had done around his walking into, and that's where the walk with Reiki, the walking into his intention, and, you know, step by step, looking at what the next layer is and what the next layer is, and deepening into that. There was quite a transformation in that period of time, and we really were conscious that it was this inception of this idea that came from him. So it felt like walking the path of Reiki in a little bit of a different way, and as we talk about the evolution of our own personal process, it was really lovely to be able to do it together and evolve this practice together, knowing that each of us were sitting for 15 minutes a day and journaling, and then we would bring that information to each other and to our conversation and allow that to be what was infusing and guiding and supporting and informing our decisions.
Mm-hmm. So did you, so I guess I got my answer, that the 21-day treatment process that you offered me came out of the work with the cards and the groups. Is that true?
Yes, and after the 4-day intensive, the fifth day, the next day when we all leave, we've done a 21-day walk together after the intensives to support each other as we re-enter into our lives with all that we've grown into in our time together, and after the third intensive, we had the cards to support us to do that, and so that was initially how we started supporting, how we started using the cards and allowing that support to come into our community. And from there, we also then offered individual support, as we did with you, and share in the stories of our clients and the what we call the Moontime Sisters, those women that joined us in the intensive, of how they use the cards in their individual journeys.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'd like to just, I don't know if this is true, but there might be some people now who are listening who are going, well, what does this have to do with the symbols? So I'm just trying to bring this back a little bit now into, so when you separate, are you talking about hands-on Reiki, or are you talking about using the elements of this and the teaching of the second degree to create this connection?
So this is Ellen, and absolutely, it is the elements of second degree that we're using with this. There is, it's not, with this particular process, what we encourage people to do is sit with the intention for 15 minutes and use their second degree practice to help pull that intention in or pull in information. So they state the intention, and for 15 minutes they use their second degree practice to just go deeper and to be in a meditation and to listen for what comes in.
Uh-huh. So can I ask, do you have a kind of prerequisite to the people that come to these intensives? Are they, can like somebody who's just taken for second degree come? Is it restricted only to second degree students? And because I need to have kind of a foundation of
Absolutely. It's a great question. And the truth is no. That, again, first degree is all you need. And it's not required. It's simply being in the meditation of paying attention to the intention that you have.
Uh-huh.
And being with Reiki and placing your hands on yourself in a first degree practice.
Uh-huh.
And just being with the intention as you do that is just as effective.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. Well, then I guess the next question that comes to my mind, should I be talking for people who are listening out there and myself, is that why take second degree then? If you can, I mean, you know, this is sort of separating ourselves from your description of your workshops and your intensive and so on, and going into more as a practice as a master or as another second degree student. What would you say if somebody said, well, if that's the case, then why take second degree?
Another great question, Phyllis. Thank you. and in the intensives that we do have first degree and second degree students as
uh-huh.
well as Reiki masters that come.
Uh-huh.
And we don't need second degree. Like Ellen said, it's just as effective with first degree, and it is about what you said for me and for those students that I have in Reiki and friends, that there's a calling that says, you know, I want to learn second degree. I want to walk into this energy in a deeper way, and that's where second degree comes in. In fact, one of the participants has come to the intensive 4 years in a row, and she just called me 2 weeks ago and said, hey, I'm ready for second degree.
Uh-huh.
Well, and it wasn't that simple, but she had the, you know, she felt drawn into second degree from inside herself, not simply because it was what she needed to do or what her friends had done.
Uh-huh. That's beautiful.
You know, this is Ellen, and I think that we have this culture that, in many ways, that asks us to do a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
And so we want to do, we want to increase, we want to expand, we want to get better, we want to get... And there's, for me, this understanding about second degree that... It isn't just about doing more with Reiki. It's really about being with Reiki and
mm-hmm.
going deeper inside. So we can say, oh, you can do this or you can do that with second degree, and those are, you know, some practical applications. But the real meat of it, to me, is about being able to go inside and to be more with yourself and more with... the opportunity that comes up with second degree, whether it's sending to, or whether it's just developing this discipline of being. Does that make
uh-huh.
sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that leads me to another question to the both of you. And when I listen to you speak, one of the things that is so obvious to me is your languaging. So this mention of this, I don't know what you just said, something about being. And
mm-hmm.
Your verbs that you use when you say being called or you met Reiki or, you know, they're very soft. It doesn't feel academic at all, which is really great for me. But I'm just wondering, sometimes I think that also for those people who are not necessarily familiar with concepts like a calling, what does that mean to you to be called to do second degree? I mean, I don't know if you can describe it, but I in a physical way, but I'm wondering if you can refer back to your own experience or perhaps to the experiences that, you know, you've observed in your students.
Mm-hmm. this is Ellen, and I'll just start by saying that my experience as a first degree practitioner was over the length of a couple of years, and I found that the more I used Reiki in different ways, whether, you know, really practically, whether it was with myself doing my own, you know, hands-on practice, or whether it was working on my friend and she on me and, you know, having that exchange, whether it was working with my mother, or whether it was putting my hands on a DVD, you know, and having it work, was amazing. It was an introduction on a subtle and profound scale into the understanding that I was connected to everything, and that not just, you know, my hands weren't just meant for, I enjoy writing, so my hands weren't just meant for writing, my hands weren't just meant for playing guitar, my hands weren't just, that there was actually something that I was able to offer in my world that connected my heart and connected my spirit and connected some kind of an energetic that was safe and profound and loving and compassionate to someone else. And I felt just in the idea of looking at second degree that perhaps there was more that I could share. Mm-hmm. And that really was, for me, I realized that I was working in the field of education. And once I took Reiki, what I realized was that my calling, or what I was here to do, was to work with people around healing.
Uh-huh.
And whether I could do that in an education setting or not, I could do that by putting my hands on people.
Uh-huh.
And in order for me to walk or to come closer to that, or to expand my understanding of what the way in which I was to do that, I wanted to experience second degree and move further that way.
And just as an aside, sort of, I find that healing is about education in sort of the most essential way. You know, I think that for me, I had to get over education being about digesting information and or retaining it for some bizarre time when I would need to know when the Battle of Gettysburg was fought and why. But or when to use commas or, you know, quotation marks and so on. But mostly I think healing is about education. I mean, this is what I've been living anyway the last few months of my life. It's a very intense what I would call independent study of healing. And
right.
And, you know, my teachers are not just people, but they're situations and, you know, that I created myself. So I think that you're on the right track, Ellen, about education.
Well, and there's something to that. There's a lot to be said for being in a class or learning through, reading about Gettysburg or anything else. Reading about, in this case, about Takata's life was instrumental to me, and learning about the history of Reiki was interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
And bringing that then into, you know, because any learning really is in, I believe that each of us has a special light inside of us, and that I can read the same thing that you can read, or I can take the same class that Heidi can take, or any of that. But there's a way that it comes through me, and there's a way that it comes through you and through Heidi that is relevant to all of us knowing more about a particular subject.
Uh-huh.
So my take on it, the way that education comes through me is important in that.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, and this is Heidi. I love that you brought up, looking at something in my where your question about academics and education. You know, I came from being a stockbroker and being in my mind, and everything coming from outside in and learning about the world from the outside, which was really important to me, and learning about intention and energy and this other world, I appreciated the reading about it, uh-huh. That kind of knowledge. My brain really appreciated that. And what happened for me with Reiki is that Reiki allowed me to take all that outside information and bring it inside to that place of what it meant to me, and the place of you ask about being called, which is another word, a place of knowing what my next step is. That's outside of my mind, mm-hmm. and oftentimes outside of my mind's ability to reason through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I love what you said about that intense study in your life, because I really see that Reiki allows us to bring in support that partners with our mind, mm-hmm. versus follows our mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And brings me to another place, and when we talk about the symbols, there are three of them that we use in second degree, and that's, I think, all that I can say in my radio persona. But there was a fad, I will call it a fad or a happening, about 20 years ago, I would say in the early 1990s, where people were being given, and I will say this with a very straight face, and being given other symbols, it seemed, in their second degree practice. And as I sat with this for a long time, I realized that they were being given something that was specific to them. And perhaps in that specific situation. And some of these people were masters, and so those gifts were then given to their students. And I don't know how well that gift has been received by those students and so on. But it's been a very interesting contemplation on my part, to find out if I needed more, if I needed more, uh-huh. not if everybody else did, but if I did, because it kind of awakened, were these three symbols all that Mikao Usui received, and is this all that Hawaii Ōtakata received in her teaching, and so on, and I have no idea about those answers to those questions. I just, this is what I got, and in some way, did I feel ripped off because I didn't have everything? And I haven't gone to that place yet, because for me, in the use of the symbols as they are taught in second degree, I find that I'm being educated about the use of symbology in my life, about the pathway that I'm walking as I use each of the symbols, and what occurs to me, what personal insights I have, and what kind of global insights I have. And the more that I use the symbols, the more I know what I don't know. And that's a very old, trite saying, but it's really coming true. And I'm totally not bored. And I thought I might be after 30 years, in 1992 or something, I would think, in 10 years, what is this going to be like? Am I going to be able to say this in 10 years or 20 years? And I can gratefully say that the symbols open up a gateway to me that is really has no horizon, in the sense that I don't feel like I'm coming to the end of my education with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if that's true for you. You seem to have taken, you know, your being with the symbols and, you know, your use of the symbols to some very deep personal work, as well as offering that to other people. And I'm just wondering if there are, you know, if there are new things that come for you, even now.
This is Heidi, and yes, every day there's a deeper relationship with Reiki, and oftentimes that's through, or I mean that is through my self practice, and it's through the use of the symbols. That in second degree, I was taught, you know, the basics of how to use the symbols, and the more that I allow myself to bring them into my own Reiki practice, I, like you, I'm never bored, and I'm always given support and guidance on how they can support me and my journey, and the same with my students. That the more that allow these symbols to support us, the more that they do, and the more that we know them and understand them, and and deepen in that whole in the practice of living. And Ellen and my term this year is, you know, living Reiki. You know, living from that place of universal life energy or unconditional love. Yeah, so I've not gotten bored. I don't see that possible, and I'm grateful for the three symbols that I was taught, and I have no just for today. I'm not asking for or am interested in introducing anymore.
You know. Oh, this is Ellen, and I like that idea that that we can be in a relationship with the symbols. Yeah, that there's and for me, in any part of my life, that there's a way to be in right relationship with something, and that's a little bit like the calling word too. Be in right relationship.
Exactly. So what does that mean, Ellen?
It means in a place where it feels balanced, and I feel like I'm offering enough that I'm holding sacred what my contract is with the symbols and with Reiki, like I would hold sacred my contract with my partner, or my contract to care for my children, or you know, for the creatures in my little forest outside that need the, you know, the birdseed feeder to be filled every day. I mean, there's something that's in the connection, in the relationship to those, that is really interesting and really exciting to me. And the more that I deepen with myself and the more that I deepen with them, the more that I recognize that I'm connected to the world around me. And that is what keeps that exciting for me. You know, I love spending each day noticing something beautiful that's happening. I'm starting to get a little bit of a reputation for it. I can't avoid in the middle of a conversation saying, "Oh, look at that beautiful," you know. But there's this place of gratitude that I have that continues to deepen and continues to come along with, with this notion that that I'm living my life, again, from a place of being instead of doing. So I I've been in that place too, Phyllis, where I have been told by another person that they have experienced these other symbols, and oh my, aren't they wonderful, and let me share them with you. And I haven't been interested in doing that because it doesn't feel like there's any need. If first degree is all you need, and if I'm letting the Reiki teach me, then I'm open to listening, and frankly, that's my challenge. You know,
does that mean that you talk a lot, Ellen, or what?
Well, it could mean that.
Or you just have a lot to say.
I'm looking for what the resonance of truth is.
Oh, I see.
Than speaking. Or,
yeah. I'm looking for the resonance of truth. I'm going to have to remember that one myself.
And that's all I have to say.
For this moment.
Okay.
Well, this brings me to, it's interesting because what you're saying, and also another twig that I had when you were describing your intensives was, how do you keep then these two practices, first degree practice and second degree practice, in integrity with each other? Because in my teaching, the symbols were secret and sacred, and it meant that, you know, I didn't use the symbols in public. I didn't write them down. I didn't have them in writing. And it's not necessarily a universal practice these days. But I would imagine that in your intensive, you've come up with some way to honor both practices. And it seems like, you know, the people who come there are not kind of seduced by the use of second degree, as for, you know, like the first degree students who come don't seem to be seduced by the use of second degree and that they have to have it in order to have a good experience. And I'm just wondering how that works for you. And, you know, do you have any, I'm just thinking about maybe other people out there who are wanting to have mixed, what we would might call mixed groups, a strategy or strategies, or maybe it's just the way that you hold these different students. I don't know.
Well, in fact, I think, this is Ellen, and I feel that for both Heidi and I, before we ever began working together, we had established a belief in our core values around Reiki that are very similar. And one of those is that those symbols are sacred to a second degree practice. One of those is, and I'm reiterating a little bit, but that second degree is not vital to the practice of Reiki, that first degree is all you need. So for these workshops, our prerequisite is that someone has first degree. But then it's a hands-on workshop. So we're doing 4 days of giving and receiving Reiki in a hands-on way. And it's not necessary to walk into a second degree practice. We encourage people to be in first degree. We encourage them to maintain that sacred contract with their practice, and to explore and experience the fact that you don't need to amp up your Reiki in order to be able to experience the fullness of the capacity of what each of us has to share in a circle or in a group.
Great.
Yeah, and as Ellen was talking about, you know, what, you know, our core, our shared core, core beliefs with Reiki, that there's equality, and whether you're a first, you know, whether you have first degree or second degree or Reiki master, that's your own personal journey, and you, and coming together as a group, it's about being in Reiki and holding the foundation of Reiki, and that's first degree.
And that we can all, in that, we can all support each other.
Yes.
So whether I'm a first-degree student and I'm supporting a Reiki master who's part of my circle in this group, I can do that fully and without worrying that anyone is being compromised or that the energy isn't flowing. The energy absolutely is flowing. It's really, I think, a way that informally, and I don't know that we've ever actually consciously thought about this, but it certainly is a way that supports each practice in recognizing that it is enough.
Mm-hmm.
We are enough. We don't have to question our capacity for being able to be with each other in Reiki.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a message that was not given verbally by my grandmother, but certainly was produced in her way with Reiki, that there were no divisions of labor, and we were all worthy of giving and receiving Reiki, and there didn't need to be, any feelings of incompetence or unworthiness. And if they were, they were soon snapped out of it. Especially if they had mentioned that to my grandmother, she would just say, oh, well, that's nonsense. Or that's your problem, you know.
Yes.
But there's no, Reiki isn't doing this to you.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's great. Good. So, one last question, and that is something about, let's see, have I lost it now? We went to, let's see. I think I've lost this question, so we'll go on to something else. It came with something that Ellen was saying at the beginning of her speaking about secret and sacred and so on. But
there is a way that we hold that. You know, the sacredness of those symbols is sort of like the sacredness of, I think you, one of the things that you asked was about the sharing of that.
Yes.
And how we would navigate that, or inside of a group of people who came from different degrees, situations. And we, you know, it occurs to me that if there was something inside of me that was happening that I wanted to broadcast, then I would do that in a public forum. But that's not what these symbols are about. These are kernels of things as inside of me that are like transformational pieces.
Uh-huh.
So if something's transforming inside of me, it's unlikely that I would tell more than one or two people about that, and certainly not until the energy had formed into a place where I could verbalize it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the essence of the energy of a moment of transformation or something sacred within you. And it doesn't have to be transformation. It can just be something that you're noodling about, or that you're wondering about, or that's, you know, shifting inside of you, or that seems deep and personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, symbol or no, these are the kinds of shifts that happen in Reiki and in first degree as we practice. They're the kinds of things that we begin to recognize that other first degree practitioners experience also. And we can know that as people work together in healing circles throughout a month, or, you know, in other places where they share Reiki, not certainly not just in intensive situations, but anywhere they are. But this place where we're experiencing it ourselves, where we're recognizing the energy of it, and then transforming that into something that becomes a part of us and moves forward. I don't know that it needs much more than that, and it certainly doesn't need to be shared. So that place of holding it sacred, I think, is something that we're missing in our lives. We miss, I think, a lot of ritual, and we miss a lot of... Well, not all of us, but in much of our life, ritual isn't necessarily as prominent as it was at one time. And so so there's something about holding sacred the gifts that we receive, whether they're inside of us or something like these second-degree symbols.
Yes. Well, I just had a conversation with someone the other day about this very thing, and this whole, I mean, even the ritual of a family sitting down to a meal together is very rapidly being dispersed, and those are everyday rituals that I feel we don't really understand the importance of until we've lost them.
Yes.
Right.
And it's not that I feel like we'll have bad digestion if we eat standing up, which was always what my mother told me, but that it would not stop in my stomach, it would just keep going. That kind of a threat to get me to sit down at the table. But I just see that there's a very important symbology of breaking bread together.
Yes.
This is just a for instance, that we are, it doesn't have to do with any kind of organized religion, but a very ancient, obvious, connective ritual of breaking bread, eating together, fixing food communally, you know, being able to have plenty and suffer through those times of not having plenty, and being able to be grateful and have gratitude. And I feel that some of these everyday occurrences of breaking bread together and these ritual experiences are really fast moving out of our lives. And I'm a great one for inviting people over for meals, and I have a feeling I'm going to be one of the still points of keeping this particular ritual alive.
Well, there's an awful lot of ease in walking through, running through a fast food restaurant while you're texting someone. This idea that you place your attention into what you're eating in the community that's gathered around the table is very provocative to me. I love that.
Yeah,
I love
too.
Doing that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, we've come to the end of our time, and I don't know that we've come to the end of our conversation, but here we are. We're in the relative world now, and and the hour is just about over. So I just wonder if each of you have something that you'd like to impart to the listeners about the symbols and what they have come to mean in your lives.
This is Heidi, and the symbols, what first came to mind was, they're friends, anywhere, anytime. The symbols are friends that are there to support me in grief, in joy, in guidance, any way a conscious friend would be. So, so that's what they've come to be for me.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Heidi.
I feel that through the symbols, I have been able to bring myself to a place of more authority.
Mm-hmm.
Authorizing my own self and recognizing that I have some very important things to contribute, and that it's important that I offer them.
Mm-hmm.
And this can sound kind of trite, or for me, it's really about recognizing that there's an inspiration that works through me, and it's my responsibility to create that in my life, to put that out in my life. And through my relationship with the symbols, I feel supported, I feel strengthened, I feel that I gain more information, more knowledge, and more word I'm looking for is difficult to find.
guidance
maybe, definition maybe, more really the connection is what has deepened for me, my connection to spirit, my connection to myself, and my recognition that I can authorize my own actions through my partnership with Reiki.
Mm. Great.
Well said.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Heidi.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Phyllis, for this opportunity to have this creative, inspiring talk about something that's very much dear to all of our lives and our hearts.
Yes. Well, yes, and the time goes very quickly. So,
well, anytime you're in Salem, come on by. We'll sit around the dinner table together.
All right. That's the deal. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.